I will discuss during lunch the excessive movement of one of the choir members, but probably will not do any good. She is totally innocent. I think probably she should have had a career other than the one she had. It must have been seeing Father's Day marked on the calendar that brought back the memory of a certain evening, as if it had happened only yesterday. Two men were sitting in my house, one wanting help, and the other trying in his own wise and gentle way to offer help. The first man was devastated because his oldest son had gotten into serious trouble and been placed on probation. "You seem to have had a good family life," he said to the older man. "I still have small children at home. I'd like to do better than I did with Jack. So tell me, if your own kids were small again, what would you do differently?" Since I had small children myself, sleeping in bedrooms not far from where we sat, I seized the chance to listen. The older man, whose name was Jim, said, "Well, I probably won't get these in the right order, but here are some things I would do as a father. One is that I would look for more opportunities to compliment my children. Parents take it for granted too often that children will know they are loved and appreciated, so they are vocal about failures and restrained in their praise. If compliments are carefully chosen and obviously sincere, children thrive on them. I would say a lot more often, 'I'm proud of you.' And I would listen better. I thought I tried to do that, even when I came home from work tired. But looking back and knowing what I do now about how important that is, I would do better. I'm convinced there is a direct connection between listening to a child's concerns and the extent to which that child will share concerns later. I would stop reading the newspaper or watching TV a little more often when my child wanted to talk. I keep remembering the little boy who kept trying to show me a cut on his knee. The story in the newspaper was interesting, but I finally stopped and said rather impatiently, 'Well, I can't do anything about it, can I?' And with the odd directness of children, he told me, 'You could have said, ouch, does it hurt?' In fact," Jim went on, "I would spend more time in general with my kids. I read a survey of 300 seventh and eighth grade boys who kept careful records of how much time their fathers actually spent with them over a two-week period. Some said they saw their father only at the dinner table. Some said he was gone on trips for days at a time. The average time father and son were alone together for an entire week was 7.5 minutes. I read the other day," he said, "about another man's different experience with his dad. He said, 'When I was around 13 and my brother was 10, father had promised to take us to the circus. But at lunch there was a phone call. Some urgent business required his attention downtown. My brother and I braced ourselves for the disappointment. Then we heard him say, 'No, I won't be down. It will have to wait.' When he came back to the table, my mother smiled and let him know she would be forgiving if he had to leave. She said, The circus keeps coming back, you know. I know, my father said, but childhood doesn't. What I felt right then was a totally selfish joy, but years later I told him that was one of the best memories I had of childhood because it convinced me I was really important to him. Jim sat quietly for a moment, reflecting on the years with his own children, and then he said, the last thing I would say, I guess, is that if I had it all to do over again, I would be even more demonstrative than I was about how much I loved their mother. My wife always knew how much I loved her, but I wish I had given the children more proof of it, like praising her in their presence when she was not around, like writing an occasional love letter when I was out of town, like holding her hand when we walked in the park. Children learn the joy and the sacredness of love when they see the two most important people in their early lives unafraid to express it. I don't remember any more about that evening, but I hope what Jim said made as deep an impression on our heartbroken father that evening as it did on me at a time in my life when I still had years ahead to try to practice it. How well I did, I suppose only my own children could tell you if they are reminiscing somewhere this morning. But I know exactly the moments that stand out in my life when I think about my own father. Fathers are usually surprised in later life to find out what impressed their children most, because so often it is not some grand gesture or the deliberate manufacture of a special day, but something so trivial the father no longer remembers it at all. I told you once, years ago, some of you, what it was for me. There were much bigger and more exciting things, vacations, boating trips, birthdays, parties. And yet, I remember out of all that with the most remarkable clarity, something else. I have no idea how often it happened. But on certain winter evenings, my dad would come in from long, hard hours of work, eat his supper, and then yield to my pleas that he stretch out on the living room floor to play a game with me. I don't know whether he was bored, which means that if so, he hid it from me. But I know that I was ecstatic to have him play seriously with me as if we were equals. Somehow I understood that he was, above all, conferring a gift of love to make up for all those hours when he had to be away at work. Times have changed a great deal since then, so in some ways, a column I saved years ago from Irma Bombeck may seem antiquated, but surely there are some mature women in this audience who will relate to her experience. She puts it like this: when I was a little kid, a father was like the light in the refrigerator. Every house had one, but no one really knew what either of them did once the door was shut. My dad left the house every morning and seemed glad to see everyone at night. He opened the jar of pickles when no one else could. He was the only one in the house who wasn't afraid to go into the basement by himself. He cut himself shaving, but no one kissed it or got excited about it. It was understood that whenever it rained, he got the car and brought it around to the door. When anyone was sick, he went to get the prescription filled. He set mouse traps. He cut back the roses so the thorns wouldn't clip you when you came to the front door. He oiled my skates, and they went faster. When I got my bike, he ran alongside me for at least 1,000 miles until I got the hang of it. He signed all my report cards. He took a lot of pictures but was never in them. He tightened up my mother's sagging clothesline every week or so. I was afraid of everyone else's father, but not my own. Once I made him tea. It was only sugar water, but he sat on a small chair and said it was delicious. He looked very uncomfortable. Whenever I played house, the mother doll had a lot to do. I never knew what to do with the daddy doll. So I had him say, "I'm going off to work now," and threw him under the bed. When I was 9 years old, my father didn't get up one morning and go to work. He went to the hospital and died the next day. There were a lot of people in the house who brought all kinds of good food and cakes. We never had so much company before. I went to my room and felt under the bed for the father doll. When I found him, I dusted him off and put him on the pillow. My children, with children of their own, talk about discipline sometimes, and they're curious about how ideas have changed. One difference, of course, was that my father had not heard the modern theories about how terrible it may be to spank a child, and given my propensities, he had considerable practice. I don't know how this old-fashioned approach may have warped my personality, but I do know this. It never caused me to think for a single second that my father did not love me. He proved that love far too often for me to doubt it, even when my punishment for being disobedient was memorable. As it was one night after a church meeting, we had lots of those, and I did what any normal boy does. I found ways to make them exciting when I was bored. And that night, my creativity went too far. Our all-white church was sponsoring a tent meeting in the black section of our little Oklahoma town, and we paid a famous black preacher from Los Angeles to come to convert whatever sinners would hear him, along with any Baptists and Methodists who might be persuaded to see that we had the truth and that unless they left their church and joined ours, they would be lost. I found out that I could roam around the outside edges of the tent, sort of in the half darkness, if I sat away from my parents. And I also discovered about halfway through the meetings that if I found a stiff, dry weed shaft, remember it was August in Oklahoma, they were all dry, I could bend it with a string tied at each end to make a bow, and then fit another notched weed shaft into it that would zing through the air 40 or 50 feet. I thought it might be interesting to see how close I could come to the black preacher who was moving and talking vigorously on the platform. And although I really only expected my weed arrow to sail up there somewhere and amuse people, as luck would have it, I whacked the blackboard the man was writing on and startled him into a moment of shocked silence. My dad was an elder in the church. He took that responsibility very seriously. And one of my helpful playmates told him that the great archer's name was Bobby Myers. My dad gave me that look and said, "I'll deal with this when we get home." He visited, it seemed to me, forever that evening with his friends, while I squirmed in agony, thinking that this might turn out to be a night I would not soon forget. And I was absolutely right. So did it spoil our relationship? So that I secretly hated him from that night on? No, I loved him as much as a son can love a father. And I never once drove back home from wherever my family lived without the most delicious anticipation of how happily we would visit. Few of you heard me say once years ago how surprised and pleased I was the day I discovered my father had more appreciation for pure beauty than I had known. It seemed to me he was caught up entirely in practical things. He liked to count the cattle if we walked into the field during my visits, or to show off his garden with the tomatoes and the watermelons and the grapes and enjoy my praise of them. Things related to hard work and profit, concrete and practical stuff. And I thought that's all there was. But there was that evening, and it's perhaps 30 years ago now, when he said suddenly, "Come outside a minute. I want to show you something." I thought it would be a new tractor, a new tool, something he had built. But instead of that, or a new calf, or a vigorous corn crop, it was a single rose bush in the yard with an enormous dark red rose on it, absolutely perfect. "Look at that," he said with a pride and joy that had nothing to do with money or mechanical things. And I had a new insight into a man who had always been cautious about betraying sentiment. I never thought to tell him how much that moment meant. So I tell you on this Father's Day. And thinking of that revelation, I have a treat for you. It is no secret to many of you that as an English professor, more than the novel, the drama, the short story, I loved poetry. That form of expression in which the language reaches its highest possible peaks of power and emotion and music. So when I found some time ago a poem translated from the Italian original, I saved it for such a day as this. You will understand why. Father, even if you weren't my father, were you an utter stranger, for your own self, I'd love you. Remembering how you saw one winter morning the first violet on the wall across the way, and with what joy you shared the revelation, then hoisting the ladder to your shoulder, out you went and propped it to the wall. We, your children, stood watching at the window. And I remember how another time you chased my little sister through the house. Pig-headedly she'd done I know not what. But when she, run to earth, shrieked out in fear, your heart misgave you, for you saw yourself hunt down your helpless child. Relenting then, you took her in your arms in all her terror, caressing her, enclosed in your embrace as in some shelter from that brute who had been one moment since yourself. Father, even were you not my father, were you some utter stranger, for your innocence, your artless, tender heart, I would above all other men so love you. I never have much interest in whether my children obey the dictates of the calendar and the marketplace and mail a card or a gift or make the highly touted phone call. They can forget all that stuff forever if I get to hear them say, on a few ordinary days in each year, Dad, I love you. Try it with your father, if you still have one. And if you don't, in his memory and in the compassionate way of Christian people, speak a silent prayer sometime this day in behalf of all the children who have never had a father at all.